big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, welcome to Killer Podcast. One half of the show here, David, and with me is the other half, Craig. What's going on, sir?
Does that make me the better half? Or just the other half?
I'm not sure which half you are. Depends on what kind of half of a thing that we're talking about, I guess.
Probably the worst half, actually, to be completely honest.
That's right. Well, here we are. We are doing our first killer post-mortem episode, talking about the Delphi trial and the conviction of Richard Allen. So we'll dig into that momentarily. But before we do, I just wanted to let you guys know where you can find us. So, Craig, you want to let the folks know where to reach us?
Yes, sir. We are on all of the normal social media channels. You can find us on X at @killer_podcast. Facebook at Killer Podcast and Instagram at Killer Podcast. And don't forget, we also have a website out there, killerpodcast.org.
Yeah, and you can go there and fill out a contact form if you prefer to get in touch with us that way. That'll send us an email and we can have some conversations. So if you guys have any case recommendations or anything you'd like to cover or just feedback about the show, go ahead and fill out that form and shoot us a message. We're not the best at social media, so you may or may not get our attention there. However, we will get your emails.
Yeah, we're still working on the social media piece. We'll get better as time goes on.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, let's roll into this postmortem.
All right, you're listening to Killer, and this is the postmortem show for the Delphi murder trials of Richard Allen.
Lock your doors, bolt your windows, and turn off the lights. We're about to begin.
All right. So as we covered in our last several episodes, we talked about the trial of Richard Allen, which brought out a bunch of new information, a lot of details on the crime scene, the murders themselves, the timeline surrounding the girl's disappearance and murder, all of those things, which ultimately led to the arrest and conviction of one Richard Allen. Craig, what were your thoughts on this case as a whole? And, you know, typically I wouldn't cover a trial the way we did, but being that this was so high profile, I felt like all the information and details were just spilled out in the trial itself. So we had this like initial event happen, the girls are found, and then like nothing. We know nothing besides Bridge Guy. And you get all the detail once we get to the actual trial. So what were your initial thoughts and reactions based on everything that we covered?
We did cover a lot of information, and you know, my initial thought was it was kind of a difficult case to cover over multiple parts because we alluded to that early on that we're relying on handwritten notes from journalists and whoever may have been allowed into the trial. So that made it kind of difficult to, you know, first of all, compile all the information, but then we did get a lot of good details as we went through. You know, the technology side of things really played a huge part, I think. That which ultimately led to the conviction of Richard Allen, and just a lot of stuff there to cover.
Yeah. And I felt like there was just so much new information, especially when it comes to the way that Bridge Guy took over the two girls. It's believed he had a gun. It's believed that he then led them down that trail, and then they ended up, you know, down through the Deer Creek area, and ultimately that's where the girls were found. But we find out the bodies seem to be moved slash posed, which also led to the Odinism theories out there that started getting thrown around. Again, we talked about that a lot, and I'm not a huge fan of the cult killing ritualistic stuff. I think it's usually bullshit, and I don't really trust it. In the vast majority of cases, it's not something that is really all that realistic. Although, you know, it's a possibility, sure. Should we look at it a little bit? Yes. However, there's probably like a greater than 99% chance it's not a ritualistic killing in pretty much every murder. I don't know how you feel about that, but there just aren't that many of them that we know of, at least. I mean, I'm not, I guess, an expert there, but I would say if you tallied up all the stats, it's probably 99% are not ritualistic killings.
Yeah, and ritualistic killings, I mean, not something I'm professed to be an expert in it by any means. But honestly, is that the first time you've ever heard of Odinism or anything associated?
For me, yes.
So, I mean,
yeah, 100%.
I mean, that completely backs up the fact that, you know, it was a good strategy on the part of the defense to pull that information in and use it as to try to make a case for something else more sinister happening with those murders and try to deflect away from Richard Allen. But the probability is so minimal. And I'm sure we're going to get static for saying that because, I mean, first off, let's a little disclaimer here. We're shooting from the hip on this episode, right? We're just going to try to have a conversation on what we covered, some of our thoughts, and then present what our thoughts are on the trial, on the case as a whole, how things went. But it's unscripted, so
yeah, right.
You guys are gonna have to bear with us as we go through this. But yeah, it's bullshit. I mean, I completely agree. It comes right down to it. It was just a distraction, in my opinion.
I agree, and they tried to frame it around like how the bodies were positioned, but also that there were all those sticks piled on top of them, and it was, you know, resembling Odinism in some form. But the thing is, like, if you murdered somebody in the woods and couldn't or wouldn't want to drag the bodies out of the woods because you'd be at a high risk of being caught, wouldn't you try to cover them up with sticks and branches? Like, it seems pretty logical to me.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Try to camouflage them to, you know, throw the search parties off, maybe not come across them. I mean, I don't think it's a great plan. You know, if you're trying to hide the murder of two bodies in the woods, I mean, eventually somebody's going to stumble over them, especially when I'm sure they were bringing dogs out to try to get on a scent trail and find them as well. I mean, that's only going to work for the human eye, right?
Yeah, and they really weren't even that well hidden. I mean, they were hidden well enough that in the early goings of the search, you couldn't find them very easily. It was also getting dark outside. But then, you know, the next day they found them. So it's not like they were hidden, you know, and obscured in some massive way.
But I mean, just to some of the points that we talked about when we were discussing the investigation and some of the evidence that was, you know, provided throughout the trial, I honestly believe that possibly the only reason Richard Allen killed the two girls was because he was spooked. Whether he heard something or was close enough to the trail where somebody could have been within distance of seeing what was going on and got scared and killed them quick, you know, threw some branches and some brush on them, tried to hide them a little bit, and got the hell out of there.
Right. And that goes back to what they said during the trial, was that there was that white van that was driven by Weber, and he was coming and going to and from a job, stopped at his house. It spooked Richard Allen. Richard Allen decided to kill the girls instead of sexually assaulting them like he had planned. He may have ultimately killed them anyway, even if he went through with it and wasn't spooked. We don't know. But that's what seems like led to the scene being the way that it was. And it makes sense. If you just really break it down logically, the whole thing makes sense. And there's a huge vocal contingent on the internet right now that supports Richard Allen, and they think he was innocent and framed. And I fully understand their perspective, because when you look at everything and you say, you know, there was this guy, he had been interviewed once, they cleared him, and then they find him again you know, from Kathy Shank's tip. They bring him in again, and then they start really questioning him, and they keep going further down that rabbit hole where, you know, they get these, they call, the people online call them false confessions, because he was in, you know, his whatever care, solitary confinement, sorry. He was in solitary confinement, he was having mental breakdowns, and ultimately that led to him admitting to these killings in a false confession manner. And that's what a lot of people feel like, he was sort of framed in a way. And I don't agree with that. And I don't know about you, but having researched this quite heavily, I can see how they get there. I just disagree. I think if you look at the bridge guy video and you see him walking down the bridge and following the girls, he looks short. Richard Allen is short. His hair is like slicked down, it looks like, which, and I believe one of the first mugshots of Richard Allen, he's got a very similar hairstyle to that. It's like, it's short, but it's like, you know, combed straight down. And to me, if you start looking at him, he looks really similar to that video. And then you start talking about finding the same gun that he owns, or a cartridge to that gun. And, you know, he owns it and has all that stuff. He also has the same clothing that was in the video, or similar clothing to the video. Again, it's not proven. That's the thing people are struggling with. Nowadays, they expect DNA evidence in every case, and that it will pin the person you know, who did the crime, and that they're guilty.
Right.
However, that's not how this works, usually. It's very circumstantial, and that's what we found, and that's why police didn't give away much information, because all they had was circumstantial evidence. But when you start adding it all up, and you say, well, he sort of matches the description, he has very similar clothes, he has the weapon that was used, he has a familiarity with the area, he is a resident, he drove a black Ford Focus, which was also spotted and parked near the crime scene. You start to add it all up, and it's like, damn, guys, like, how many more, you know, circumstantial pieces of evidence do you need for this to not be so circumstantial anymore?
Right.
And I think the jury got it right.
Yeah, I think they did too. That's one thing that I was thinking about as we covered this too. How weird is it that we obviously don't have the evidence of the bloody and muddy clothes from the actual crime. And then 5 years later, they find very similar clothes. Like, he almost went out and purchased the same outfit after he discarded the original one. How weird is that?
Yeah, either that or he just did a very thorough job of cleaning. It had been years since that happened, you know? And so he just had to wash his clothes several times and then you're good. Or like you said, maybe he just got rid of the ones that were contaminated and bought similar new ones. It's hard to say. No one knows for sure. But again, it's the evidence is like just stacked so much on one side. Like, you just ignore the false confessions for me. Like, you can ignore all that. If you just go by all of that other stuff, it's very, very, very much on the side that Richard Allen was there. He even put himself on the trails that day when he originally said that. And a lot of killers will do that, especially when they feel guilt. But yeah, so like, you have all of this information that just really puts him at the scene, in my mind. I thought there was a lot that to be desired, right, from the evidence and everything that we had. But what they gave us, to me, was a lot. And we didn't get to see any of the videos, and we didn't get to witness the actual testimony and trial for real. It wasn't something that we got to see because cameras weren't allowed in the courtroom. So that being said, from everything that I know, that I've read, that I've researched, that we recorded, that we put out here for everybody, to me, I feel like they got it right.
Yeah, I feel like they got it right as well. But I mean, since we've wrapped up our coverage of the trial, we found out, or did, you know, heard that the full video, Bridge Guy video, was released, and it's actually released on the Free Rick Allen website, those that are fighting for his innocence or whatever.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. There's a Justice for Rick Allen website. It's called rickallenjustice.com. And let me just read to you this webpage. It's a little wordy, but it says, "A wrongful conviction built on doubt. The prosecution's case against Richard Allen in the Delphi murders lacked strong physical evidence. DNA analysis failed to link Allen to the crime scene or victims. Firearm analysis, a key part of their argument, relied on subjective comparisons and couldn't definitively tie the unspent round to Allen's gun. Eyewitness testimonies were inconsistent and unreliable, with conflicting descriptions of the suspect. Notably, the prosecution's star witness admitted that the bridge guide descriptions didn't match Allen, undermining their core theory. Instead of concrete evidence, the prosecution relied heavily on alleged confessions Allen made while in solitary confinement. The defense argued these were unreliable due to Allen's declining mental state caused by isolation and harsh conditions. Prison staff testified to Allen's erratic behavior, including self-harm and delusions, suggesting that his confession stemmed from a mental breakdown, not guilt. The defense also highlighted coercive interrogation tactics like lying about evidence and threatening the death penalty. The lack of physical evidence and questionable confessions raised serious concerns about the fairness of Allen's conviction. We are now preparing for Richard Allen's post-conviction legal work. We need your help to make this happen. And then they have a enter your email and you can get updates. But in here, which is where you were heading, there's a transparency button at the top of the screen. And if you click on it, it takes you to a transparency and justice page. The attorneys representing Mr. Allen continue to receive considerable number of inquiries and requests for access to public records and exhibits related to the state of Indiana versus Richard Allen. In response to similar requests, the court has stated that the exhibits are needed for the production of a transcript if one is requested by the parties, and that fulfilling such requests will interrupt the process and guarantee the reporter will be forced to ask the Indiana Court of Appeals for an extension of time to file this transcript. Recognizing the significant public interest and in the spirit of transparency, this site will serve as a central resource for accessing public records, exhibits, frequently asked questions, and updates on Mr. Allen's post-conviction legal proceedings. All information will be provided in accordance with the Indiana Rules on Access to Court Records and Indiana Code 514.3. So, I just said a lot, but here's where the meat and the potatoes are. They play the full 43-second raw video that was recorded on Libby's phone and uploaded to Snapchat. So, let's take a look at that and listen. There's some stuff I want to talk through here, so bear with me. So we're 9 seconds in. There's a shot of Abby on the bridge. Bridge guy's walking up from behind. And Abby whispers to Libby, "Is he behind me?" So Libby aims the phone towards some gravel rocks. And you hear her talking to Abby and saying something like, "This is the path that we'd have to go."
See, this is the path that we go down.
And it seems to me like they're trying to like talk to each other to like kind of like something weird's going on. And they're like, "We don't know what to do. Like, let's pretend, like make small talk with each other about what we're going to do. Maybe this guy will just leave us alone." And then you hear Libby say, "There's no path here, so we're going to have to go down there."
There's no path going there, so we have to go down here.
And you can hear them both kind of breathing a little heavily right now. They're getting nervous. And then you hear Bridge Guy say, "Guys." And she says, "Hi." And then says, "Down the hill." Down the hill. And that's where the video ends. So it's really, we've seen bits and pieces of this video, but we haven't seen the whole thing. And that's where Bridge Guy is walking down the bridge. Abby's on the bridge. She starts kind of hustling down to finish off, get off the bridge. And Libby's on the other side videoing her. Most of the video is staring at the gravel on the ground. And we'll have a link to this in our show notes. So if you haven't seen it yet, you can go out and check it out. It's just, it's really sad, like when you know what happens after this.
Right. From what you gathered there too, with her, it sounds like they start breathing a little harder. So they're getting either nervous or excited that somebody's coming up to them. So they know that there's going to be an encounter of some sort, maybe by the way he's approaching from behind them.
Exactly. It seems like they are well aware that something feels off. Either he has already said something to them and was approaching from far away, or his demeanor gave them some weird vibes. And then they just start trying to, it seems to me like they're trying to look at each other to figure out if they should run. is kind of what I'm gathering, but they don't have time. And there are transcripts that show that when he approaches the girls, one of them says, "That be a gun," but you can't see him. They only show him for a very brief amount of time in this video. Most of the video is staring down at the ground, surreptitiously recording him. So it's really crazy to see, but at the same time, again, it kind of lines up with the, like, the gun at the crime scene. Obviously, there was a bullet that they found and all of that other stuff, which they all knew. This all came out in court, but one of those things that nobody really knew ahead of time.
Man, it's kind of creepy. I wish the video would have been fixated more on him coming up behind her for a longer period of time, and we would have right. captured that audio of him saying that be a gun, or one of the girls saying that be a gun.
Yep.
Because they have no choice at that point other than to comply. I mean, unfortunately, there was no one else around apparently at the time, just the three of them. If they would have yelled or ran and got somebody else's attention, maybe he would have took off, right?
You never know. And they usually, you know, police usually say not to, don't follow the person who's escorting you into a vehicle or whatever. Don't comply. Because once you comply, your odds of survival are drastically diminished compared to those people who fight or run. Which, again, these are young girls. They're in a weird position on this bridge. They're way up high. There's not an easy escape route. They're really screwed from where they stood.
Yeah.
And that's the bummer of all of this. If they were down on the ground somewhere where there's a flat trail, maybe they do take off running.
No easy way to get out.
No, he had them trapped. He had them right where he needed them to be to control them. The only thing, like you said, that would have made this investigation so much easier is if the girls would have shoved the camera in his face, basically, and got an actual picture of him on video. This was going to Snapchat, so even if he destroyed their phone, it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, it would have been in the cloud at that point.
Yep, which would have furthered the investigation.
But I get that, though. You have that second nature, even if you're in public with a large number of people around you and minding your own business, doing your own thing, whether you're with, you know, your kids or your spouse, you can see those people that'll look at you like they're going to approach you and say something. And I'm, for whatever reason, I must have some kind of look on my face like, hey, come say something to me, because it happens all the time. But I'm always uncomfortable because I'm a little socially awkward out in public anyways. It's like, but to your point, you hear the change in breathing and their mannerisms, you know, indicate that they're nervous about this guy coming up on them.
100%. I'm the exact same way. I have this look on my face. People like to just randomly talk to me when I'm out, and I don't know why, because I'm the world's most socially awkward person, especially when you randomly encounter me out in public. Like, I'll either be extremely nice to you, extremely flustered, and say something incredibly stupid, or I'll be a total dick. Like, you'll just get one of those three things. And I don't know. It's just such, I'm so caught off guard by it in the moment. But if this happened to me, the same thing, I would feel really shy about recording someone without their consent, or I don't know them, and all of a sudden I'm flashing my video camera in their face kind of thing. Like, I probably would have a bit of a reservation with that.
Well, I would too. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but we must both have the same, we must put off that same feeling to somebody where they can just walk up and say something completely random. I'm trying to think of the last time it happened, but I hate it every time.
Oh, it happens to me all the time. Yeah, it happens to me constantly. People come up and say weird shit to me, and I don't know how to react to it because I'm not a small talker. I absolutely hate small talk, so I really, really struggle in these situations, and my wife makes fun of me all the time for it. And she just laughs at how awkward I am.
Yeah, I know what the last time was. It was here recently. I went to buy some dog food, and I was at the store, and the lady was behind me in line. I had what I wanted. I'm usually in and out. I know exactly what I want. I go in, I get it, I go to check out. Lady behind me in line, she's like, hey, they got all that stuff over there on clearance for $1 and $2. I'm just thinking to myself, I'm here to get what I want. I don't give two shits about what's over there in that shopping cart for sale. It's just stuff like that. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah, she's just being nice and like, hey, just so you know, there's some stuff on sale over here if you didn't see it. And you're like, I don't fucking care. Like, I just want to buy my dog food and go home. Like, get out of here, you know? And
yeah, I don't want to talk to anybody.
It's so terrible. I always feel like such a prick afterwards, but at the same time, in the moment, it feels normal to just shut it down. And I don't know why. Like, I have no real reason for it, but it happens anyway. But
Oh, I have a terrible time shutting it down. It's usually, okay, I don't want to be a dick. I don't want to come across as an asshole. So I'll feed into it a little bit, but I'll try to end it as quickly as possible. Then it just keeps going and going and going. I'm like, my God,
yep.
Just go away. I just want to say go away and fuck off. To be completely honest, just leave me alone.
Yep. I feel that. I feel that in my soul. But anyhow, yeah, back to this video. It's really stirred up a lot. You know, people still feel that this is Richard Allen is innocent and that's not him in the video, et cetera, et cetera. Again, I still think they got it right. I think they did all the right things. And also, miraculously, Richard Allen did have like a lot of his old electronics, but the cell phone he had during this time period was suddenly missing. I don't know if we talked about that in the earlier episodes, but
I don't think we did.
Yeah, when authorities searched his home, they didn't have a cell phone for him for this time frame. He didn't have it anymore. Which, again, like, I don't know that there would have been physical evidence on that phone. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. But it would have given the authorities a way to track him. I don't know if they were able to figure out, like, cell phone records and see which towers were getting pinged off of, that kind of thing. I never heard anything about that. And I don't know if you needed the phone because of the length of time between to be able to get that information and understand if it was him and tie him to the scene.
Right.
Because, of course, I'm guessing authorities have those records somewhere. They just don't know which phone was his. And so they can't definitively say, like, oh, yeah, he was near these cell phone towers at this time.
That seems kind of strange because you would think if you have cell phone service, you have, you know, a carrier and a plan, they could do a little bit of back investigation and say, okay, well, your phone was reporting in this location at this time to this tower, you know, even if it wasn't being used for a call or video or whatever, you still think they could put those pieces together to some extent.
Yeah. I honestly don't know how that works, especially with the time gap. So I don't know if authorities had records that said, you know, here's our cell phone tower and here's all the numbers or phone devices that pinged off these towers in this time frame. But they didn't have his device to be able to say it was this one. You know, this device with this IMEI number and this serial number was here. And I don't know if how long carriers keep those records for. So say, for instance, the authorities had the cell phone records. That's great. They have the tower records. But the account records for these devices is wiped like every 2 or 3 years. Maybe they don't know anymore, you know, because it's been so long.
True. One thing I will say, going back to the Justice for Rick Allen website, they bring up mention of, you know, DNA evidence, and we did touch on that when we were covering things. The length of time from the murder until the arrest and conviction and all of that stuff, you're going to lose DNA evidence. But there is a valid point made there. When they did the sexual assault kits on the girls, there was no evidence there of sexual assault, so no DNA recorded or maintained at that point in time. So there's a little bit of, you know, merit to what they're saying there with the DNA evidence. But, you know, aside from that, I think all of the other pieces are pointing in the right direction.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, they did have DNA evidence that I think showed an unknown male or something like that. But it was such a trace amount, they couldn't tie it to any, it wasn't enough to test on, I believe, if memory serves, right? So I could be a little bit wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure they had unknown male DNA evidence that could have easily been a male that lived at the home of one of the girls or was like a close relative that they were in close contact with frequently, that kind of thing. But the actual DNA evidence outside of that, that would like link somebody to a murder, just did not exist. They didn't have blood evidence. They didn't have any of that stuff. Granted, this all took place outside. It was near water. It was wet, muddy, yucky out. It would have been really hard to pull his DNA evidence from all the blood that was there, as I understand it. Could they have? Yeah. It was also in the mud and dirt and sticks and leaves and all that stuff. I don't know how easy it would be for them to do that. I'm not a DNA expert or a forensics expert, so I'm not sure. However, there wasn't really any that they found, and I'm sure if they could have, they would have tried to find it. And we made mention of that, right? Like the sticks and everything. They never searched or like tested the sticks right away. The branches they found on the girls, that kind of stuff. it was a little bit later that they went back and got that.
Yeah, they went back 2 weeks later, then gathered up stuff. I'm like, even at it 2 weeks period of time outside in the weather,
yeah,
it's kind of pointless. And the only other DNA evidence that they, I think, was mentioned or recorded was, you know, it was a strand of Kelsey's hair.
Yeah.
That they found on one of the victims. So, I mean, that could have been transferred in a car when she dropped him off.
Yeah. Well, and then they also had Ron Logan as a person of interest for a little while. It was his property, I believe, that the girls were found on. And everyone thought he was guilty. And there's a lot of theories about him that were going around. Again, they couldn't really prove anything. He was a known abuser. He abused his girlfriend, and she was on the record saying, you know, he was an abuser. He ended up dying, I think, of COVID, if memory serves. And, you know, it was just, it's all over the place. A difficult thing, right? There wasn't DNA evidence. That's what makes this so challenging, and that's why these people are really hard on for Richard Allen being innocent. However, there is no DNA evidence for anybody. It wasn't just him, right? Like, we have no DNA, period, end of story. So that doesn't mean he's innocent. They just don't have it in this case. So you can't use that as the only basis for your claim. All of the other circumstantial evidence lines right up with this. Again, similar clothes, similar build, looks like the guy in the video. He has the gun, he has the bullets, he has the car. All that stuff matches. And he put himself on the trail that day. So again, why would it not be him? That all that stuff, I know it's circumstantial. It's just, it's too much to ignore, in my opinion, despite everything else. Then you have him confessing to it, which again, you could argue he was insane. He's in solitary confinement. I still am not having any of it. I just am not. I don't buy it.
And speaking of Ron Logan, that dude, he was actually a freak. After we finished up recording our episodes for the trial, I saw some different videos and commentaries from some of the acquaintances of Ron Logan, you know, when he was under the microscope. And somebody will probably fact check me, but I think there was one of his domestic violence victims stated that he had broken into her house at one point in time, lights are off, and she woke up in the middle of the night and that dude was standing at the end of her bed.
Oh yeah.
Like, dude was a freak in his own right.
Yeah. But again, we found a cast of freaks throughout this whole trial and this whole saga, right? You had that Kagan Klein. Like that pedophile that was out there trying to solicit underage girls. Like, there's all these weirdo people we come across in Delphi. Something's in the water.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy how you get all this stuff that comes up through these investigations. Yeah. But again, authorities are looking at these people. And
yeah, right.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. You know, they're not finding anything.
That's what I was going to say. The investigators did a good job on their part. I mean, they didn't leave any stone unturned, right? They're looking at everybody that was involved, you know, in the area, and rightfully so, some of those guys. It's like, wow. That Keegan dude, he ended up going to prison after they found a bunch of, you know, child pornography in his house or whatever on his computers and whatnot. And I think you are right on Ron Logan. He did die during COVID. But I think with everything that happened around that case, I don't know that he stayed in that area after things kind of settled down. I think he may have moved out, but
yeah, I don't know that, but yeah, he was wild.
And the cast of characters just goes on too. I mean, there are so many things, and I'm sure that some of this stuff is going to come up once we get to the appeals process of this whole case, because I'm sure that's in the works.
Well, yeah, he filed his appeal officially the same day that this video was released. So I don't recall which day that was offhand, but it was very recently. I want to say it might have been March 14th or so. It was, you know, the appeal was filed that same day.
There's a lot of stuff there to add to his appeal. I mean, you have investigators on the case that are true crime fans and talking about the case outside of the investigation. You have leaked information to social media websites and different content creators. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be an interesting appeal process when they start laying it all out again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else you want to hit on for the Delphi stuff?
Not really. I think we'll just try to keep everybody updated as much as we can once that appeal kicks off. And if any new information comes out, hopefully they take a little bit different approach with that part of the trial or new trial or appeal or whatever. and actually allow for some video and so we're not having to dig so hard to provide information.
Right. Yeah. We'll keep everybody posted as there's updates, probably a little bit more informally than we have through these many episodes. So again, thanks to everybody for sticking with us and listening through the series. I hope you found it as compelling as we did. We plan to, you know, continue to keep an eye on this, like we said. And up next on our radar, we'll be visiting West Memphis.
And it's going to be a very, very interesting, some very interesting content to share on West Memphis 3.
Well, this whole Justice for Rick Allen website reminds me a lot of Shades of West Memphis. Let's just leave it at that. So if you're not familiar with the West Memphis 3, you're in for a doozy.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. And for those listening too, yeah, just stick with us. We're on a little bit more of a sporadic schedule, trying to keep up with everyday life, but we're still working. We're still trying to get recordings done and put information together. And this is, I don't know if we're actually going to publish the video on this. We're testing some new video platforms to capture some of the banter back and forth. I don't know if we'll do it for some of the episodes, but we'll see. And I'm not sure anybody really wants to see my ugly face on video anyway. So
yeah, agreed. I don't want to see your ugly face on video either. Yeah, we're messing around with some video stuff to see if we can turn this into a, you know, video podcast as well. It gets a little tricky when we record and have to edit out stuff and have to edit it in two places type of deal. And, you know, we record this audio locally, which again is getting kind of into the technical weeds, but it provides better quality audio output for the podcast, but the video would be a little bit different. So we're kind of working on some things. We'll see how it goes. At least for now, maybe we'll use it for some socials and things like that, but I don't know if we'll release the full recordings just due to the editing we have to do, because Craig and I can't read good, and we end up having to edit out a lot of stuff.
Reading is hard. Yeah. And talking for a long period of time evidently is hard for me. So
yeah, as we discussed earlier, neither one of us are very extroverted, so you get the monotone voice, a lot of stumbling over our words, and lack of confidence in what we're saying.
Yep. And repetitive statements that people have called us out on, but it is what it is. I've watched plenty of podcasts where it's the same fucking thing. So
it is, man. People beat you up for it, but they're not out there fucking recording podcasts either. So, you know, you can only let that go so far, but it is what it is. We made fun of ourselves for it first, and we're like, fuck it, just publish it. you know?
Exactly.
We're well aware. We're trying to fine tune it. It's been a minute since we were doing this, and you get out of practice. You also get used to the Zoom calls at work all the fucking time. So, like, you're so used to being on Zoom now that you don't really watch how you talk anymore. It's just, I don't know, it sucks. I've noticed I have like really, really bad habits now from Zoom.
Yeah. As long as a Zoom call doesn't take you somewhere else in the house that you shouldn't go or something else happening. I mean, it's happened to me. I've just anything, weird sounds, dogs raising hell in the background when the mailman shows up. Sometimes it's complete chaos.
Oh, I think the beginning of this show, you could hear I have a cockatiel and he's over there talking up a storm, and he's like, you know, one room over, but I'm going to guess it's fucking picked up in my audio that we haven't listened to yet. And that bird is going to town nonstop, yapping his ass off. So you might hear that one in the beginning of this episode.
Yeah, it's all right. We've heard both of our dogs barking too. So
yep,
it happens.
We're not recording at 4 a.m. anymore, so you didn't get the 4 a.m. stomach growls.
Oh, thank God. We do have all those saved if we ever have a blooper reel that we want to release.
Yeah.
We could compile those all into one nasty sounding long sound bite.
I'm sure the audience will really love that.
Yeah.
So, alrighty, sir. Well, I think that's enough for this episode, and appreciate you guys sticking through. Look forward to recording the West Memphis 3 and getting that out to you guys. I think you'll be in for it on that one. That's going to be really entertaining, to say the least. That's a wild, wild story. So
it's going to be a good time. And as much content as we didn't have to work with on this Delphi case, we have lots and lots of content to work with on West Memphis.
We do. A lot of sound bites. So thanks for sticking with us, guys, and we'll catch you on the next one. Stay safe.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.